Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back. We're joined, as we have the privilege of being each week about this time, by Gordon Chang, one of the country's preeminent authorities on matters involving U.S. interests in Asia, and more broadly, but particularly with respect to China. And there's a lot to talk about with Gordon, as there has been in the past years. But as we speak, there's news out of Trump world about communist China and its North Korean allies, topics on which Gordon Chang is particularly suited to comment. He is a columnist at The Daily Beast. He is a contributor to Forbes.com and WorldAffairsJournal.com, and of course the author of Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World, and The Coming Collapse of China. Always a most welcome guest here. Gordon, Happy New Year to you, sir. Welcome back.
Happy New Year to you, Frank, and thank you so much.
So we had Donald Trump, it appears, once again rocking the world with a 140-character tweet. He has talked about communist China not doing enough about its North Korean proxies, and specifically about stopping the North from testing an intercontinental ballistic missile. I was talking with Tom Popick about the strategic significance of the latter a moment ago. Give me your thoughts on both, if you would, Gordon.
On New Year's Day, Kim Jong-un gave his New Year's address and said that he was ready to launch an intercontinental ballistic rocket, which presumably is code for a prohibited ballistic missile test. The Pentagon, just hours afterwards, said that there would be consequences, quote-unquote. But I'm sure that Kim just rolled his eyes at that because he's heard that so many times. But what he didn't hear before, and this is significant, is that on Monday evening, Donald Trump said, quote, "It won't happen." And probably the North Koreans are taking that as a threat to use force. It could also be a threat to impose costs on China for its relationships with North Korea. But just shortly after the first tweet, Donald Trump also then went after the Chinese for not helping on North Korea. So clearly the president-elect has established where he stands on this. He has said what the issues are going to be when he takes office. And I'm sure the people in Beijing are a little bit concerned that there's going to be a significant change in U.S. policy towards North Asia.
Yeah, I want to come back to that in a moment, particularly in light of some of the personnel choices that the president-elect has made since we last talked, Gordon. But before we do, you've written recently about another tweet that the Trump machine put out before the end of the year, specifically about the need to expand and strengthen our nuclear forces, in part as a result of concerns about the threats that are developing, of course, including those from North Korea, but also China and Russia beyond. Is this a new arms race, and is the president-elect responsible for starting it, in your judgment?
Well, many people say that Donald Trump started a new arms race with his tweet a week ago, but I don't think so. I think there has been an arms race. It's just that the U.S. has not been participating in it. And also, it is just pretending it doesn't exist. You know, the Russians have been violating the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Agreement, INF, which is considered to be a cornerstone of peace in Europe. The Chinese have been building missiles and nuclear weapons very fast. And we've sort of taken the view that none of this matters. But clearly, the U.S. arsenal needs to be improved and updated. And I think the president-elect is going to do something about that, because President Obama said he was going to do it, but really hasn't. And these are weapons we use every day in protecting ourselves. This is deterrence, something that we don't think about anymore.
Yeah, the idea that they're only usable when they're actually launched is, of course, nonsense. Gordon, you said something very important there. You said that the Chinese are building nuclear missiles and delivery systems, pronounced pace. When we hear from our officials on this question, at least to date, and the arms control community, as it's known, we're relentlessly told they only have about 300 or 400 weapons, which seems to be fixed in amber from, you know, the Mao time, just about. Give us a sense of what your read is on that, if you've got one.
clearly the arms control community views China as a responsible member of the nuclear community when, of course, it's been proliferating this technology to, of course, Pakistan, North Korea, and Iran. We don't have a really good fix on the number of nukes in China's arsenal, but one thing we do know is that they are building launchers at a very fast pace, which indicates that they've also increased substantially the number of their warheads. And this is something that we've got to take into account because, you know, we try to have these agreements with the Russians, assuming that there are no other nuclear powers of consequence. But clearly China and Russia are moving very close together. And when you put the Russian arsenal and the Chinese arsenal together, it's probably a lot bigger than ours. And so this then gives us raises the whole issue of how many warheads do we need to protect the American homeland and our allies and friends.
It does raise that question indeed, and it, of course, also underscores the point that I think Donald Trump was alluding to, which is that we need to modernize our nuclear forces. It's not enough just to have an appropriate number. They have to be the right kind. They have to be safe and reliable as well, all of which I'm hoping is going to be part and parcel of his agenda. Speaking of his agenda, and Gordon, coming back to the policy towards China and the nervousness that you think is happening in circles in Beijing at the early evidence of a course correction by this new Trump administration. Talk, if you would, a little bit about our mutual friend Peter Navarro, who has been brought into the White House as a senior economic advisor, and the appointment just today of Robert Lighthizer, who was formerly the deputy trade representative under my old boss, Ronald Reagan, and will now be the top man in the trade representative's office. What does all this mean, do you think?
Well, what we're seeing is a clear pattern, Frank. It's not only Peter Navarro, who is going to be the head of the newly established National Trade Council, but is also the pick for Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, and now you have a new trade representative. This is going to be important because it says that there is a very new approach to China on trade. It's going to be skeptical of what we have had in the past. And this is something that Beijing is really concerned about because it has a fragile economy. And as we've seen, its imports and exports are falling. Their economy is delinking from the rest of the world. And this is a two-year trend for China. And they do not want to see Navarro make trade policy. But I think we are going to see something which is much better than we've seen in the past.
When you look at the implications of all of this, Gordon, we're talking about trade being viewed more skeptically with China. And for the longest time, as you know so well, it's been trade uber alles. And that as long as we were doing business swimmingly with the Chinese, even to our detriment, and this is something, of course, Peter Navarro has, among others, documented intensively, we've actually seen a lot of other things going very wrong in this relationship. China and North Korea being just one example, of course, the South China Sea as well. As you look at this new cohort of advisors, as well as the tweets and the president-elect's, you know, seeming attitude, where do you think this goes in 2017?
Well, there's certainly going to be more tension between Washington and Beijing, and there should be. You know, aggressors always like calm in the international system so that they can consolidate their gains, and that exactly is what China is doing. So there needs to be less friendly relations between the United States and China, and that's where we're going. The dynamic, of course, worries many people, should worry everyone, of course, but nonetheless, we need to have a new policy with regard to not only China but Russia, and we are going to get them. I'm concerned, of course, where the Trump administration is going with Moscow, but I trust that we will see a return to a more hardline position, largely because Putin is not in the position really to have good relations with us at this point. And that's especially true of the Chinese and the North Koreans because of problems internally, both in their economies and, of course, in their political systems.
These will be subjects to which we will return often with you, I know, Gordon Chang, in 2017, as we have done for the past few years. I can't tell you how much I appreciate your time, and we'll talk to you again next week. Next up, we'll talk with Chris Farrell of Judicial Watch about their work on terror in Latin America. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.